Today's speaker is Shelby Rising Eagle, and they will be speaking Saturday at our conference, Survivorship Bomb 2014 Conference in Oakland, California. Shelby Rising Eagle is a survivor of SRA from the Mormon Church. In her book, it was the love of her son and his special needs that she began to face the reality that her husband was continuing the abuse. She sought the help needed to piece together fractured life of the physical and emotional experiences and trust her memory. The discovery that her beloved children were also being abused galvanized her into a series of changing maneuvers, life-changing maneuvers, that included healing her life and living with BID successfully. With her children healed and life moving forward, she is able to share her story to inspire others, that they too can claim their lives. The title of her workshop is Empowering Your Healing and Finding Success. And now I'd like to introduce Shelby.
A lot of what I do, I really want you guys to participate in, because it's going to kind of be like a group therapy thing. So I enjoy your feedback, your experiences, as well as me sharing what I went through. So please feel free to step on in and speak up. I want you to understand that what you did to survive, you can use to heal. I'm going to say that one more time. What you did to survive, you can use to heal. When we talk about DID or MPD, I call it DSS, Dissociative Survival Skills, because it is our own brain's natural ability to survive trauma. If there is a way to survive trauma, there is a way to heal. A balance, yin and yang, or in Korean, um and yang. There's always a balance of good and always a balance of bad. So you have to decide what path you want to walk in order to do this. Your abilities are already in there. You find a therapist or whatever path you choose to take, and you will be able to awaken the healing path inside of you. And this is something that I had to do. Another thing that has happened this last year is something I've never thought of, is what is being healed to you? What do you visualize as being healed? So towards the end, I want you all to think about that. Share with me what being healed to you, how do you visualize yourself as a healed person? Because I've spent over 20 years always working my skills to, you know, with a therapist or memory work and stuff and claiming my life and building things and putting things in my life that I want. But not once. It just, you know, in a pitch for me of, well, what is being healed? You know, I would like to think I'm pretty well healed. I still have some dysfunctional proclivities here and there, but, you know, I'm all right. It might be good. So please let me know what you think that is, because I think that as we go through our healing process, we all develop onto the negative, and we don't really stop to think about, you know, that is it really a final destination? Is it really there? I mean, I think we just always have a journey, but being healed in your journey is always better than being, you know, where the state that we were in before we even, you know, knew. I'm not going back, that's for sure. One of the first steps for me in claiming my life was my own self-worth. My parents made sure that I had no self-esteem, no autonomy whatsoever. I was not worth nothing. And they always went out of their way to make sure that I understood that. I always felt like I was different than others. There was something wrong with me. I was the one with the problem, you know. And and being in that kind of a family dynamic, you know, if you go outside of the norms, and in this case, dysfunctional normalities, there is something wrong with you. And so these are really common behaviors. One of the things that I did when I was healing is that I made a chart. I visualized a line with two, a horizontal line with two vertical lines. at one end, you could walk all over me and abuse me and whatever, and I would never ever put up a fight. At the other end, I would kick your ass. I would beat you up. I was either here or I was here, and I did not know how to be in the middle. I never knew a middle ground. So as I went on in my therapy, I started visualizing this and then forcing myself with self-honesty. What am I doing to myself? How am I presenting myself to others? You know, am I combative? Am I too soft? Do I have no boundaries? What? And so when I had talked to my therapist about this, we started doing a path of my day-to-day life and how I responded to things. So then I started putting it, well, what is the middle? How can I visualize what a middle is? How can I visualize my interpersonal skills and that this is a middle ground and these are good areas to be in? Because I either know I will beat you up or you will walk all over me and I'll never lift a finger for nothing. You know, so, I was a very combative, violent person. So now, for me, I started looking at talking and drilling my therapist about, you know, what is an appropriate response? What are interpersonal skills? What are the appropriate things? So I started to re-educate and reparent myself. It was very interesting to see, because as I went along in my therapy and processed memories and stuff, I began to see how it affected my day-to-day lives. Can anybody want to share something? Now I'm getting nervous. Does anybody want to share a thought? No? Nothing yet? I'm not inspiring nobody today, I see. I remember one time going into a feed store, and I sat there and talked to a stranger, don't know her, and basically poured my whole bullshit, all out, my whole garbage of life out on her, and she's like, oh my God. And I can feel myself in the back going, will you shut your mouth? Shut up. You know, it's like something in my head's going, you know, this is not appropriate. I just want you to know that. And it just, you know, and I went home and went, God, I made an ass out of myself. That's when I started working my little chart, because I'm not artistic at all. And that's when I really realized I needed to really change how I interact with people, how I spoke to people. I still have a very hard time. I'm naturally loud. I'm naturally combative. And so, if you tell me no, I'll be like, but, you know, I like to think I'm a much kinder version now. But it's still there. I think some things of who we are, our essence is, that's just who we are, you know. But I would have to, I processed and went on with Kate, and where I just started to have a self-honesty with things and really think about these things. Think about the scenario socially. How, you know, in the workplace and stuff, because it's always been hard for me to keep a job because most people can't deal with me. And because I'm too forward, I'm too honest, I put too many spades on the table. If you want some honesty, I will give it to you, you know. And I won't, I try to sugarcoat things now, but I used to not. So for you, as we heal, our normalities were not very normal. Our normalities in a very abusive environment were very horrific. And so, but we had to survive. We had to learn how to survive these terrible things. And then my family kept me away from a lot of other people. They just isolated me in the Mormon church and those who were involved in it. When I first started realizing that I was multiple, back in the early 90s it was multiple, and that I had one therapist tell me I was a survivor of sexual abuse or incest, I didn't even know what that was. Okay, now point of denial now. And then the memories started to come in little bits and pieces and stuff. And it was really hard to face. And then I started realizing that I had two sides. I had the indoor people, and I had the people who survived outside. I had personalities that only would come out if I was in the house and told to, and the other ones were, I call, the outside people. When I started realizing this, was very hard for me, because for me, I could not, I knew where my house is, I knew where I lived. I could go up to my front door, but I could not remember being in my house. And you're going to have moments in your healing where you're going to have significant things that say, hello, there's something really wrong. How come you can't remember being in the house? And it just hits you like a ton of bricks. And that's when I knew, because, you know, at that time in the early 90s, as the prior presenter said, you know, it was about false memory and all this kind of stuff. And my sister was on a rampage about that, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so it was very important for me to know one way or the other. And so I had to really think it through. And one of the things that I did is that, how do you know if your memories are true or not? And like I had said earlier, is if you go to high school and you look through your high school book, you remember these things and you feel these things and stuff. You remember the smells or whatever. Then it dawned on me, it's about the same thing, you know, with bad memories, about terrorizing experiences. And if I felt the terror, if I felt that moment in time, and I'm a lot like the prior presenter, it's bits and pieces here and there. But there were bits and pieces that I would plug in and I would feel that moment and feel the terror and then unplug. And that's when I realized there's something very wrong in my life. Does anybody have moments of clarity of knowing that they're abused? No? Yeah, go ahead.
Moments of clarity? As far as, well, I've been...
Epiphanies?
I get a very intense body pain.
Mm-hmm.
And what helped me, and then usually if I focus on that, then I get images and then feelings.
Oh, okay.
And what helped me was, because I was very frightened when this happened and doubting everything.
Sure.
But when I started reading different things and hearing the same thing about your mind can be fooled, but your body can never lie, things like this,
that
helped me to trust that, you know, I could trust my body, especially.
Yeah. Yeah, we're little memorexes, and we record everything, like you said, and it all goes somewhere. And but yeah, you're right. Thank you for sharing that. That gives me an insight of once again, us as human beings on how we survive things. We all need to come together. We all need to share so that we can validate one another and learn from each other. I started remembering the pinwheel and my mother doing the hypnosis and naming and training and stuff. And she put up this huge wall that I had to break down. At that time, I was in my early 30s and my son, late 20s. And I just felt like there was this big black hole. And then other personalities started coming out. And it was so hard. It was so familiar to me. It's like, I know you. I think if we all stood up and we all held hands, this represents each person in your system. You know them. You feel them. You know of them, but you don't have this absolute awareness of them. But then you begin to have it. Does that? Am I making sense, or am I just babbling on? So, okay. So then I had to just go around and start meditating and thinking about these other altars and feel who they are, feel who their personalities are and stuff. And for me, the puzzle pieces started to come together. At that time, when I started, I couldn't be in the same room with my mother. I felt like I wanted to kill her. I hated her. And it was this overwhelming fear of, I need to kill you. And I just had to walk away, and I didn't understand it. And as time went on, I began to understand. And it was, that's when other personalities on the other side started coming across. Because I'm sorry, I feel a little scattered right now. I had to walk away from my family. I was still in the Mormon church, but I had to walk away from my family. But nobody was maintaining the altars on the other side that lived in the house. And all of a sudden, I started feeling this confusion of, where are they? What do we need to do? What's going on? You know, what the hell? And then that's when I realized there's a whole other set of people on the other side. And a main one came out. And for the first time, they saw outside of a house. And it was very interesting, but that one personality that came out, she started protecting me from them because they were trying very hard to trigger me. And because she was so rebellious, like the other one on the outside, we got along very well. And she would tell me when I was triggered or this is a bad person and things like that. And I had to slowly keep going to therapy, keep building myself up, keep getting stronger. I started to feel the other children on the other side who were forced to do the wrong things to other children and other people, and forced to do it to other people. And I remember sitting in a park, and they saw children, and I still cry, they saw children who never got hurt. And I remember thinking and like telling them, these are children who don't live like we did. And they cried because they didn't really want to be a part of that. And they were so amazed and shocked that there were children out there that did not live and be forced to do, that they had parents that didn't do things to them that my parents did. And that was one of the most empowerful moments of knowing you are really abused. And then in time, I started to had to face the fact that my children were being victimized by this. And my son's special needs forced me to get help. And the therapists who were helping my son started helping me. And that's when everything started falling apart. Because when it comes to my kids, there is nothing I wouldn't do for them. And all the children on the other side that lived in the house did not know that that's were my kids. And so it was really hard. But they said that we will help you to protect your kids. So my system really started coming together. It was hard, but it was coming together. Anyway, part of well, I'm still not going off of this thing, so I apologize right now. There must be something I need to say or something, or somebody needs to hear something. So, but anyway, I think that during this process, I think they tried really hard to trigger me. I worked at a Burger King, and I was at the drive-thru. This lady handed me a dollar. And on it, in the same print and color as the dollar bill, was Santa Claus. And I just remember getting really dizzy and getting lightheaded. And I'm like, no. And I just, you know, just, you're not doing this. And I didn't understand it at the time until later when I talked to a therapist about it. And the Mormon church at that time couldn't control me. And I had walked away from my family. And they needed to shut me up because there were so many people around me who were a part of this. And they were running scared. And they didn't know what to do because I wasn't being controlled no more. And so one guy was following me around in his car, and he parked outside my house. And I remember just being paralyzed with fear. And again, the warrior woman had to come out and just say, oh, hell no. And the pen was mightier than the sword that day, because I went out there with a pencil and paper and took down his license plate, and I empowered myself, and he burned rubber and took off. And I was like, wow, they've got more to hide. At that moment, I realized that they have more to hide than I realized, that they're more afraid of me than I am of them. That was such an empowering moment. And in your healing process, you have to find that those empowering moments of, I respect myself too much to allow you to treat me like this. It took me a long time to learn that one. And actually, right now, I'm relearning it. There's things in my life now that are very toxic that I have to get rid of. And because I'm changing again, and I'm growing again. So I guess healing never stops, because we live every day, so we all evolve and change. And but anyway, that was one of the most empowering moments right there, is that they had more to hide, and they feared me more. Yes.
I was. Do you have any idea where that courage came to come out? I mean, that's kind of a confrontive thing to do. I mean, I'd be hiding in the house scared.
I felt like that. But even when I was little, I always fought back. I was always this little warrior kid, just, you know, piss off, go away. I always fought back, and it got me in lots of trouble and lots of punishments. It is the essence of who I am, and I've had to accept that I am a strong woman. I don't want to be. Can I be kept? Anybody want to be my sugar daddy? But I'd still be obnoxious and strong, so it's not going to change anything, you know. But it's just who I am. I cannot identify with people who are soft and who are very... And again, there's nothing wrong with that. I just can't. I can't relate. Because I've always had to fight. I've always had to be strong. I've always had to survive. And that part of me is still just as strong today as it was when I was a little girl. So I think that's why they had to put a wall when they did the naming and training, because they could not control my warrior woman. They could not control her, so they had to keep her out of it. And that's what they feared most, because they knew I would say something. And they knew that I had the intelligence to say it in a credible manner to people in public, and not undermine myself. And I have slowly reached to that point where I can sit here and hopefully I present myself in intelligence to empower you, because the more you understand, the more you learn of this and can relate or have a sympathetic understanding, most people in here an empathetic understanding, the harder it is for them to do what they do. And that's why I speak. Because to my last breath, and then what they do is wrong, and I will do everything I can with intelligence and courage to get people to understand, to make it harder for them. It's the art of fighting without fighting. And I learned it well from the Mormon Church, because they're very good at licking your face and pissing on your feet at the same time, and they will have you coming back for more. And I know it well. I try not to live it. I make choices not to live my life like that, because it's something that I've always known how to do. I was taught how to do that. So I've had to recognize those behaviors and separate it out. Another very empowering thing was my ex-husband. He would write, pay to the, you know, the F order of, you know, the child abuser of and stuff, and then he just quit. You know, I remember going into the bank and they wouldn't cash it, and then I got mad, and then, you know, well, we're really sorry, you know, and stuff. And then my ex-husband quit paying altogether. So I got an attorney, went into court, and I watched him make an ass out of himself. He stumbled with his words. Here's this guy who has been this powerful person that I was married to, treated me like crap all the time. And here he was fumbling around being an idiot, and I'm like, wow. You know, the isolation of community and going out to the community and then looking back, just that separation is just very empowering. And that's when I began to realize that my world in the Mormon Church was very tiny in comparison to the rest of this earth. And I'm like, thank God. I don't want them like that. But those things were... those moments in time were very empowering. In time in the Mormon Church, it wasn't long because they could not control me, because they could not maintain, and the other personalities on the other side started breaking down those walls. And we started working as a team. We became, they all started to reparent themselves, re-educate themselves. They would take turns in therapy, and they would listen in therapy. And they would begin to take that information. I have visual perception dysfunction. I cannot read and understand very well. I read college level, but my comprehension is second and third grade. So to compensate that is auditory. So I work auditory books as much as I can. Because if I read it, I'm going to miss a lot of stuff. It's hard. And and my job now is very simple, understands that, and so they read things to me if I need to know something, or they'll come and tell me, because if not, I'm in there asking them, and they're like, okay. So the state president, prior to the state president issue I talk about in my book, I was talking to a Bishop Pace, and now he is mentioned in some of the survivorship stuff of what he's done for victims of survival. I know him. And he was talking to me, and he said some of this stuff happened to him, blah, blah, blah. But they ran him out of town. Two people from Salt Lake City came, and I remember being in the state president's office, who was the guy above all the bishops or all the little communities underneath it, and he was a higher up, so we ran out to explain it. And one guy, he was sitting there, I could not see him. He was like a black figure. I could not see his face, his arms, his legs. His whole body was shrouded black. It was like a black barrier, a veil. I do not know who, and I still cannot see him. I don't know who he is. But I could see the other person. And I remember sitting there going, why can't I see this guy? Why can't I see this guy? And that was another validation in my life that of what had happened to me and how much I needed to recover. And they had asked me about my brother, who has his degree in child psychology and family relations and works at LDS Social Services. And they said, well, you know, you're talking about stuff your mother did. What should we do about my brother? And I'm just like, why are you asking me? That's your decision. You know, here I am with no boundaries, and I'm giving them boundaries. Okay, you messed up. I'm checking you, and I'm in my early stages of healing. And, and I said, you know, I think maybe you should do what Christ teaches and love him and help him to recover. Go to an independent therapist, let him do his work, and there you go. But support him, help him. So I don't know what happened with that. And then it ended up being I was talking crap about my brother and all this kind of stuff, and it wasn't what happened. Then, because they could not control me, because I'm too obnoxious and frustrating when people try to control me, the state president took me into his office and he said, you know, you have 6 months. You need to pay your own bills. You need to feed your own kids. And mind you, I had a handicapped son and I had a little girl. And he says, we're not going to help you with your son. We're not going to help you feed your children. Nothing. And I remember sitting there going, I'm sorry, that's not what I was raised in the Mormon church, that I was told that you do to your own people. And he says, well, that's too bad. And I said, I really don't remember Jesus saying, you know, you kick out the widower and the widow or the divorced woman and her kids and put them to the streets. He says, well, that's too bad. And I said, so if I needed something, if I needed a jacket to keep my child warm, would you help me? And he says, no. And I said, if I needed to feed my kids, would you help me feed my kids? He says, no. And I said, well, if I'm in the rain, would you give me an umbrella? He says, I won't ever help you, ever. He says, the Mormon Church is no longer going to help you. And I says, oh, yeah, I remember Jesus saying that in the red words in the Bible. You bet. And I told him to piss off and, well, other exploratives. And I walked out of the door, and I never walked back. The reason why he did that is because they couldn't control me. They wanted to stop was making my life happen so that I would fall on my face and go back to my family so that they can control me again. I never did. I may have fell on my face, but I never went back to my family. ever. I picked up myself, and I remember driving down the road, down the freeway, and it dawned on me, I have nobody. I have no one. It's me and my son and my daughter, and that is it. And I remember panicked. What am I going to do? Oh, my God. And I had no idea what the next day would bring. I just knew that I had nobody. But I kept going forward, and more doors opened. I started to learn martial arts, and that door opened for me. I did it so that I can protect myself, you know, from the bad guy, my ex-husband. One time he followed me over to Pep Boys, or he was driving by my house, and I jumped in my car and went after him. I'm crazy. He went to Pep Boys and ran and hid in the bathroom, and I'm like, and I'm just like, you are such a coward, you know. It just, I'm just different. But anyway, that door opened up, and it ended up turning to be my learning path of healing. And there were some people that I, to this day, I love. One of them, I've watched their kids grow up and stuff. He has just become a fifth degree black belt. And this time next year, so will I. And in the martial arts I teach, I will become a master. So through my process of my martial arts training, I ended up realizing that I love martial arts, that it keeps me having better self-control so I don't beat on people. And, you know, so I'm a little opposite of that. You know, I went in to defend myself. I was whipping my instructors behind and sparring it as a white belt, and I'm like, okay, never mind. But I'll keep going. But the path of healing for me created by my interactions with these people. And I would sit back and I would watch them. And that one of them, the one that just got promoted, he is a very stoic person. He doesn't talk a whole lot. So I learned how to shut the hell up. You know, and I still, to this day, may say too much. And I have to recheck myself, rein it in. And so I learned from him. And then as my path went on, I gained better quality people and better quality people, and as myself improved, my relationships improved. So it was very empowering. I'm going to go back about, let's see. Our perpetrators have to hide what they do to us and how they keep things secret. For me, they have to build the wall, name and train the personalities, and then keep control of me. Once I walked out of it, it started falling apart, which is good, because that tells me that all of us in here can recover. So as I began to really think about their behaviors, this something I just kind of caught on to was learning about behaviors, why people act this way, why do they respond and stuff like that. During the abuse process, when they were training me, everything was to hand my power to them. You are worth nothing. I was nothing. I meant nothing. And I had to hand my self-worth to them for whatever they wanted. So if you think about those dynamics, empower yourself with that understanding so that, you know, it's about, for me, bringing it back. It was about reclaiming my power and bringing it back to me and not handing it over to anybody, because it was easy for me to be at this end and you can walk all over me, or I went to the violent end. So when I started to really look at these people, they had to always do it. It was like the chess game, you know. Yes, they were in public, but they had to trigger me to go back to the family so that the public saw, well, you went on your own. What's your problem? Does that make sense? Because if they trigger you and you choose, and if you, I say choose to respond, it's a choice once you become aware, is that they're getting you in to look normal in public to go back to being abused and controlled. And so I had to think about that and work through that. And that was one of my most empowering things. When I began to realize that they burned rubber and they made an ass out of themselves in court, I began to realize that these people are nobody, they're nothing, they're cowards, and you have to keep going. You have to keep going forward. You have to keep claiming yourself. Does anybody have anything to share? I know I'm not that riveting of a speaker. Anybody have moments of empowerment they would like to share?
I was wondering if you could explain again about the when they were trying to trigger you in public,
mm-hmm.
and the looking normal. Are you saying you had to be brave enough to look, to be visible, to rebut them in front of people?
No. When they, for them, it was triggering a personality from the inside of the house to take over this body to walk back over to the perpetrators.
Right.
That's all. And I took away that their power. I took that power away from them because they always trained me to hand it over. Well, I started claiming my own power back. And my other alters inside had to learn that they didn't have to listen, that they're not going to get punished, and that they don't have the power that they made them believe that they have. It's taking away that power. It's taking away their authority. Once they began to understand that they were vulnerable and that they were cowards and that they were pathetic human beings is when they went, wait a minute. Then the next set of emotions come in. Wait a minute. I've been used and abused. And then they had to sort through of how they were used. And we had to take the time to process that. But beginning to understand the dynamics of how they behave, and if you look back, now again, this may be triggering. I remember in Sunday school, they have a song in the Mormon church, I'm a child of God who loves me, all that stuff. And I remember thinking, and I was about 4 or 5 at the time, thinking, well, Jesus must not love me, you know. And every night I would go to bed and I would pray, Jesus, please take me back to heaven because I don't want to live another day in this house. And I remember thinking, I don't want to be here. I didn't understand why, but I did not want to be here. And I would close my eyes and I would believe that as a little girl, when I opened my eyes, I would be in heaven. Well, my dad caught on to that. And he brought some of the other people around, set me in the middle of the room, and they started hitting on me, demeaning me, slapping me, and saying, pray to Jesus, because Jesus isn't going to stop you from doing this. Jesus doesn't love you. Jesus is not going to come here and stop us from hurting you. You are nothing. You are nobody. And that little girl died inside. So when you think about those dynamics, you have to turn it around and empower yourself of that little girl couldn't stop what was happening, but I can. And, you know, and it's about nurturing because all of us have a point in time where we want that mother. Go ahead.
You were talking about examples of empowerment and
mm-hmm.
What you just said. Well, I was thinking about it too. And I do meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of guided meditation where I go back and see myself as a kid that I connect.
Mm-hmm.
I connect with my strength. I believe like I have a core of
sure.
spirit,
mm-hmm.
soul that is has a lot of strength, and
mm-hmm.
that if I can connect with that in meditation and
yeah.
pull that strength into my personality, and then I go back and love myself as a child, you know, visualize myself as a child and tell it the things I didn't hear as a kid, because
mm-hmm.
I got a lot of you're worthless too.
Mm-hmm.
And,
sure. It's the same behaviors.
And what I find is from doing that over and over, because some of these meditations, I do them every day. I don't do the same ones every day, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've been doing them for years now because I enjoy them as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And with other things, like I go to 12-step meetings
mm-hmm.
and share about my feelings. I can't share about details of my abuse because I had a lot of fear. But what I've found is like having things, nurturing things I do on a daily basis like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what happens is something starts to build in me, like
mm-hmm.
a strength. And all of a sudden one day I was at a 12-step meeting and I was able to raise my hand and talk about being a ritual abuse survivor. And I had never, I had had so much fear around that before, mm-hmm. because they programmed me to think or keep telling anyone that they'll say you're crazy and they'll put you in a mental hospital.
Yes.
No one
yes.
will believe you.
No one will believe you. Yes.
That kind of stuff. And so I was terrified.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's kind of like an emotional gym. You know, you go to the gym every day, and if you go three times and you look in the mirror and you're like, it doesn't work and nothing, you know, nothing's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to a gym every day for months,
yeah.
you start to see a difference. And
yeah.
it's the same with the meditation, the inner child stuff.
Yeah.
After
yeah.
months and years, I just saw a change yeah. in my personality where all of a sudden I'm stronger in a way that I wasn't before.
Yes. And it's about these moments here, just like this, gaining that personal power. For me, I don't meditate that often. I don't. My mind's too busy. And I one day I'm going to sit down and do this and not, you know, make myself simmer down and do some meditation. But I've always had to work so hard. I've always had to have a job. I've always had to take care of my kids and stuff like that. So I've always had to just feel like I had to just do this myself and, you know, go to the therapy and just keep going, you know, keep going and stuff. But anyway, I'm really scattered today and I apologize. One of the other things, if you're not sure if you are a victim of abuse, you know, ritual, satanic abuse, for a short time before I left the church, I had a certain babysitter. And one day, my son and my daughter were going to therapy. And my son said, well, that's grandma's house, my mother's house. And I went, what? And yeah, that's grandma's. And he proceeded to tell how my mother lived in that house and do terrible things to him and Vanessa. And I confronted the babysitter. I said, I'm sorry, do you know my mother? And again, she was Mormon. And she goes, no, I don't know your mother. I said, then why does my son say that she's over at your house all the time? I said, what the hell's going on? And she was gone in 3 days. She packed her stuff and left state. She left the state. So I had a lot of things where it just said, hello, McFly. And sometimes you have to really pound me on my head. And so, again, that was another empowering, another validating moment where I had to just say, okay, I have to keep going forward. And I talked about the people in the inside and how they went outside. It's a very interesting feeling to have feelings and personalities that come out and see stuff that they've never seen before. Of a society that they've never seen before. Go ahead.
I found the self-defense class similar to your martial arts, but
mm-hmm.
I took one that was offered by a women against rape group specifically
yes.
for survivors.
Yes.
Very, very instrumental. I took it when I was 20,
mm-hmm.
and I had that frozen, I can't move, and so I had conflict or anything, I would just
mm-hmm.
freeze. And being in my body, standing on my feet with people around and learning skills, I got it on all sorts of levels on my
mm-hmm.
body that I wasn't killed, that no one, you know, and I was actually given tangible skills to do in a situation. And that was a huge shift for me, you know, to be more in the present and exercise courage and speak up more. So if anyone hasn't done that, it can be scary, but in a real safe environment, for me, it operated on all sorts of conscious levels that I didn't even have my memories at that point, except it started stimulating.
It was just starting to come, yeah, yeah. One of the things I do go over and I volunteer at WEAVE, Women Escaping a Violent Environment, and I teach women self-defense, and the first thing I say, do you fight or do you flight? Which one are you? Do you become paralyzed? It's okay if you are, because it is our human reactions. But know what you are. Know if you are paralyzed. You would scare me at first, and then, bam, I'm mad. You know, that's my reaction. A lot of the times in violent encounters, it's not about how you can beat somebody up, but it's about how you deal with it so you don't get hurt. To make an example, I'm a fourth degree black belt. I get paid to toss guys. I love it. It's great. It appeases me. But my husband, he's a very toxic person now, and he's going through some treatment for Hep C, and heavy drinker. The past couple of years has gone downhill quite a bit. And the Hep C treatment causes you to have more violent behaviors. Well, he hit me in my throat. He punched my face. He punched here. And this was a couple of weeks ago. And it would have been really easy for me to beat him up. We could have had a really good tussle going. But I didn't. Because he was so enraged. His anger, I've never seen this in him before. And I just stood there. And I just let him scream and yell and touch me. And then I said, "You need to stop touching me." And he said, "I don't have to." And I said, "I will call the police. I will turn you in," because he has two strikes from a prior marriage over 20 years ago. And I said, "You can spend the rest of your days in prison, and you can die there." And he just went back. So it's not always about physical violence. It's about here, being intelligent. And it stopped him. And it's now the ace in my pocket, because now I'm going to pull out my double-edged sword, and I'm going to slowly get him out of my life, because he is the toxic person in my life. And even today, since the beginning of this year, I've made the decision to not be treated like this anymore. And I'm mad at myself, because how can I come up here and sit here? I'm sorry, do you mind if I do a little therapeutic thing? Do you mind? How can I sit up here and tell you to empower yourself when I'm allowing myself to be abused? And it has really irked on me for a while now, you know. And I'm like, okay, I have to revalue myself. I have to what are you doing? What needs to be done? Why are you allowing this? Because I am allowing it. So I'm glad for this weekend. It's really put me back into perspective of what needs to happen, what I need to do. And I thank Survivorship for having this here, you know. So I apologize, I'm not perfect. I think we're just all human. I want to talk about religion really quick. Because I was raised in the Mormon church, I had a time where I had to say, I hate the Mormon Jesus. Because as much as I wanted to say that there was no God, because I thought about that little girl who prayed and all the other things that happened to me, you know, there must not be a God, you know, screw everything. And I would have a lot of rage about the Mormon Jesus and the betrayal of you're being told that this is God's only true church on the earth. And the discussions I always had with bishops as I was doing some of my memory work before I left. And, oh, there's free agency, you know. And I said, well, where's Jesus' free agency to pull something out his back pocket, because he is a divine being? If I can come up with one or two things, certainly he can take some responsibility on what's going on with these children in this church, you know. And I would slam them. And I really wanted to say that there was no God. I really wanted to say, screw everything, but I couldn't, because deep in here, despite all the trauma that has happened, deep in my soul could not say that there was not a higher power. For me, I could not say it. I knew there was a higher power. So I set upon finding out my path for my higher power, you know, what it represents to me. And I spent about a good 4 or 5 years mad at the Mormon Jesus. I was mad for a while. I'll hold on to a few things. And I remember just driving in the car and just screaming, you know, why do I have to go through all this healing? Why do I have to do this? You know, why couldn't my life be better? You know, that kind of stuff. And I'm hoping this is normal. But I eventually realized that we all have the light of our Creator in us, however we want to define it, because there is no such thing as the only true church of God. The Mormon church is not the only true church of God. Not if you have Jesus running the church and you are having sex rings and satanic people, you know, worshiping Satan with children. I'm sorry, He does not want me to come to the other side because I got a few things to discuss with him. And he is not going to like it because it's just wrong. It's just wrong. It's the insanity of thinking. And I used to tell bishops, if I come to the other side and I find out it is, I'm going to kick his ass. Well, there you go. Violence cures everything. Where's the world peace? You know, and I used to say, and if I go straight to hell, I said, Satan will be at the pearly gates going, what did I do now? Why are you going to put her down there? She's going to run everything. Yes, I would. And it would be better, nicer. But, you know, I really had a hard time with that, separating that out. And so I went to different churches. I went to a Black Baptist church. That's fun. I didn't know you can have bumping music in a church at the same time. I was like, wow. You know, I'm not sure about catching the Holy Ghost thing. But the bumping music was really good. I like that. That's better than the, you know, hallelujah stuff. But that really helped me because I sat down and I took a moment and spoke with Pastor Chithon. His view of Jesus was very different than what I was raised with. The toxic shame, the rigid rules, the being ostracized. You're not going to be accepted back into heaven or, you know, whatever the dysfunctional saying was. And to him, it was with Jesus, everything can be done. To me, in the Mormon church, it was like, well, Jesus, you know, the punishment kind of thing. You know, you better act and behave like us. It was very mind-empowering. It was very opening for me to realize there is a different perspective of, you know, Christianity. I choose not to be Christian. I cannot, it's an abusive environment to me. Going into a church is going back into the same abusive environment. I can't do it. And if I do go into a church, it has taken me a good 15 years to even walk in a church. I did for my Kuxo brother who died. He had Lou Gehrig's disease. And when he died, it was the services were in the church. And I went in there. I got brave because I trusted my Kuxul family, the martial arts that I teach. I trusted them. And they've never hurt me. And they still don't hurt me. And they love me very much. And I love it. You know, so, but for me, I think that I do believe in reincarnation. I know I took some Qigong classes. And I had a Qigong master come up to me and say, you were Chinese in another life. I said, well, that explains all the kung fu movies I keep watching. And why I like this. And again, I never really even thought about doing martial arts at all growing up. It was never, I'm going to learn to kick behind. You know, never did that. But it came in, and I'm a natural teacher. So I have a gift of teaching. And so it's something that works well for me. So I've been able to find something that works well for me. But I still won't go to church. And I kind of go with Gandhi, you know, Christ was great. It's the followers who have the problem. And I just let it, and I just leave it there. You know, let me know. So, but you get a lot of toxic shame when you get into really organized religions like the Mormon church. And then they suppress it. And I've come across some other people who were raised in the church and things have happened to their children, and how, again, it's the same thing. Shut it down. If I ever hear pray and read your scriptures again, and if I come out swinging, just understand, because that's not a very polite response. You don't pray and read your scriptures because you were traumatized and raped. You go get help. You don't tell them that. That's the no talk, no tell rule. You know, pray and read your scriptures, the no talk, no tell rule, you know. And I was too busy going around being defiant to everybody, every leader in the church, going, you know, and there you go, you know. So, but it, for me, that was my path, and I had to gain that power for that. And understanding toxic shame versus healthy shame. The more you educate yourself, the more you reparent yourself, the more you experience your life, the more you're going to recover and heal. And now I'm 54, and I'm looking at my older years, my crone years, and I'm going to love every minute of it as best I can. And I will probably be 90 years old with a cane teaching martial arts or on my horse. You know, so go ahead.
I know that there's abuse everywhere in every religion and all kinds of institutions, but I was just wondering if you had an opinion on how much of an open secret it is within the Mormon hierarchy of the extent of abuse.
I don't think they even want to look at it. I think that there are some good people in leadership, but I know that even on the higher ups at Salt Lake, there are people who are a part of this, and they do the pray and read your scriptures. And, you know, don't look over here because I'm pissing on your feet here. You know, there's nothing to see here. Yes, there is. No. Because if you educate the masses in the church, they're going to start seeing that you don't lock the door when you have Sunday school class. That's not appropriate. They're going to see, you know, certain things that go on in the church that will cause pause for you to wonder what the hell's going on. And they don't want that. Go ahead.
Do you think, because in general, has largely been not educated in society.
Yes.
So in general, there's been a lot of misunderstanding of what's happening. And
yes.
So I see that within religious leaders as well, just not knowing what they're dealing with.
Yeah, they don't know what to do or say. If they have a good heart, they don't know what to do or say.
Right.
They become overwhelmed. This is one of the things that have happened to me as I've shared my experiences, is that they think you're a freak and you need help. Go put her in a mental institution and they run away.
Right.
Or they try to understand and everything in between.
Right.
Because it is. Now, over 20 years later, I'm looking from the outside back in. It's interesting. You know, because I used to be in the middle looking out. But now it's nice to look back. It's empowering to look back. And I feel sad for them, but if you don't know what to do, we know what to do if we know how to change diapers and we know how to, you know, burp the baby and things of that nature. But when it comes to something like this, if you've not experienced this, if you never abused or hurt a child, it's hard for you to wrap your brain around. And sometimes it is still hard for me. How can my mother do that? How can my father do that? He wasn't raised in the Mormon church. You know, people have a hard time wrapping their brain around this. My first book, and I've even heard from Shemai, that it's hard to read, even for a survivor. Because my first book, I put it in the third person. Because I wanted people to understand the dynamics of what these people do. And it means nothing to them. So I had to put about, how would you know about a little girl whose parents never left? How would you know? How would you know? So I proceeded to write it in poetry, you know. And to have it removed from their person, it's over here. Because it is hard to get people to understand that there are people that my parents never thought twice about it. It was normalcy to have group sex with all my brothers and my sister. And if we don't, we get beat. We get punished. I got punished a lot because I kept saying no. But it is hard. It's hard. One of my students I did share. And he said, it's so hard to understand this. He says, I can't even visualize acting in this manner to my children. And I said, good. I'm glad you can. That's a good thing. Just know that there are people who do. And leave it there. I don't want you to understand. I don't want you to know. Because it's not worth knowing. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll share something the group also that I wish that was unique to the Mormon church.
It's not.
Christian church. It's not.
It's not.
We have it in, forgive me for this, but we have it in parts of the Jewish religion as well. I see it in associations.
Yes.
Top levels. I've experienced it in government.
Yes. They're the worst.
Associations. I've also seen it in our educational system.
Yes.
I mean, once you've been abused and made into a victim, other associations and groups will find you, and you get reabused in those other systems as well. I mean,
is
the way my experience went. I also saw it in the FBI. I saw it in different parts of government. There are a lot of good people there. They're not all
bad. Yeah, they're not all bad.
There's a bad core, and they kind of, you know, unfortunately, they destroy it for the other ones. It's like the bad.
They do. But, you know, again, I'm not responsible for anybody else's actions but my own. And it is unfortunate because it is true that there are people like that.
And my daughter said something to me the other day I have to share, which is part of this, what I was just talking about. And she's 17 now, and she said, Mom, think about our educational system. The first thing we do is we take young kids, what, 5 years old when they start school, or whatever, daycare, maybe mm-hmm. daycare centers mm-hmm. are not all of them are good, let's yeah. be honest. And we stick them in an environment where they're prisoners. They're in a room, they have to sit and listen all day to somebody talking. And by the way, that's about the worst way to learn.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you want to learn something, you go out in the world, you go to a job environment, you learn from people who are doing it, you experience it. You don't just sit and listen. This is like the world. And she said, and then you're prisoners in that classroom all day long for how many years, and it's required by law. That's actually, it breaks your concept of freedom. Mm-hmm. She feels our educational system is just really broken.
Oh, it is. It yeah. is. It really is. Because, I've learned how to do multisensory teaching for my students in my school. Because everybody learns differently.
Yeah.
Exactly. I learned from, at Sierra College, Nancy Alsa.
That's right. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, not the same. Sorry. But Nancy Alsa, everybody in the class, like, just like right now, everybody's kind of shy to say something, and all of us were the same way. We're really kind of shy. But what she did, and I grabbed this, and I run with it, and I still run with it, everything she said, if somebody even gave the wrong answer, she said, that's a really good thought. Yeah. It brought that person up instead of, no, you're wrong. It's about turning those things around. You will never have, I mean, if you ever hear me saying that to a student, you know, oh, hell no, you know, or you're so wrong, you know, they were at it for a long time and months, okay? I only had one student I had to kick out because the behaviors were so bad. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Okay, so now I have to throw one more.
Go ahead.
That my daughter taught me. She teaches me a lot. So she said, Mom, I was doing an experiment in class, the other day, a science class, and she said it didn't go right, and the teacher kept saying, well, you got the wrong, you know, you did the wrong, you got the wrong answer. And she said, Mom, when I thought about that, what I realized is I didn't get the wrong answer. I just don't know what I proved.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love those thoughts like that. We all need to think more like that. Yeah. You know, and I truly, yeah. I got to meet your daughter. Yeah. We're going to have a fun time. I can tell right now. But every one of us, have, just like the gentleman prior, the synapses, our brain, all of this stuff, we have so much in us, so much abilities in us that we barely tap into. What would happen if we had a society that had real education, that brought children up, that worked, you know, I'm more of a Waldorf-y teacher. Come on, let's just do this and let's get involved. I have my two cool granddaughters. Their father is my assistant instructor now. When 10, 11 years ago, I just felt really moved by spirit to bring these boys to Kutzel. I had an after-school program at Wilsey Wood. It was the ghetto school, right? The guy who ran the after-school program was complete rubbish. You know, here, just whatever, you know. So he brought all 100 kids into the gym to do martial arts. In 10 minutes, I had them all kicked out, but five. But because I kicked him out, they left me alone. But I mean, you know, I had one going, oh, you don't like me because I'm black. And I said, half my family's black. I said, you got a problem with that? And she went, you know. And so I always try to, you know, kind of turn it around. But my point is that, like with Will, my Kutzel son, even his mother said, I would go into G Parkway, you know, the hardest part of town. I don't care. I have no boundaries there. And, you know, and I would bring these boys. Now, 10 years later, Kenny calls me up. I haven't heard of him in 10 years, moved out of town. Kenny calls me up. And he says, ma'am. I said, well, Kenny, how you doing? Well, you're having a baby. No, I'm not. I said, what needs a uterus for that? And I'm pretty well done. It's gone. No, I'm having a baby. No, you need a uterus too. And you're not going to, you know, I know darn well you don't have one unless there's something I need to know about. No, ma'am, no. You know, my wife is, you know, we want you to come up and be a part of the wedding. My wife's having a baby. And I'm like, his mother called me and said, I knew he'd call you. And that opened that door again because of acts of love and kindness. 10 years later, they call me. Now I'm Grandma Ma'am. He's got three boys. Will has two little girls. I'm Grandma Ma'am. I'm their mom, too. what happens when we nurture and love people, when we allow our humanness to be involved. What will we achieve? I think we will achieve many great things if we allow ourselves, if we allow our society to be like that. Not right now, but hopefully it will. Go ahead.
I think it's amazing when we allow ourselves to be those pockets of light wherever we are.
Yes.
We help infuse that. And there are good people in religion, they're in government, and
yes.
And it starts to tap in. Because I come from a religious background. In fact, I am Mormon too. And so I grew up in that environment. And so I think the more that we perpetuate that goodness, the more that vibration is on the planet, and the more we create the world that we want to be.
Yes. Yeah, because I can choose to dwell on the negative, and I can choose to, you know, battle City Hall and the Mormon Church or whatever, you know, but what am I accomplishing? Nothing. It's not going to change who they are. But if I choose to be a voice of intelligence and a voice of education, I can, like you said, and I like that analogy, thank you, pockets of light. These pockets of light are coming up more and more. Even from 1990 till now, look, the changes in understanding of MPD and DID, the DSS, you know, where they're understanding and we're evolving again. So all I can do is just give you hope that, yes, no matter how traumatic it is, no matter how awful it is, you still have that ability to survive and recover and claim your life. Because the one most powerful thing we have in this world is love. Love is the most powerful healing force ever. And it keeps coming back to me. And I'm so grateful for it. Because I did at one time open the door back up to my family, and I'm sorry I did. I am so sorry I did. You know, and because now my brother, who's 5 years older than me, came and saw me, and, you know, I really love you. And, you know, when I first came back, you know, actually it was my family who contacted my daughter, not me. They wanted my daughter, and they have successfully turned my daughter against me. I have paid a heavy price, and I'm sorry I did it. Go ahead.
The perpetrators want to keep you in fear. That's
yes.
The whole plan.
They have to keep you thinking that you're not worth it. Yeah.
And once you see the truth and have more power over that fear, and the more you stand up to what it is, the more you get healed.
Yes, yes. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you so much. It's very true. My daughter's path now, she's a lot like me. Well, she is like me. That apple did not fall far from the tree. So I'm going to take faith in the fact that I taught my daughter to be very independent. She's very intelligent. She does think for herself. Her biggest issue is that she's got that little green eye that, you know, things are better off over there, or they have that and I don't. As an example, I got her a horse. She's taking cutting lessons from Doug Ingersoll, world-renowned trainer. My girlfriend and I would go back there, turn back cows for him. Best of times. All my daughter can see, my girlfriend got her a retired cutting horse, though he was very sway back. We had to prep her for that one. Okay, he has one flaw. He's very good looking, except he's got a back that literally does this. And he's been that way since 2. So she's got on her cutting horse, and she goes over there, and all she can see is that the buckle bunnies, the cuties, you know, and all she can see is that they have something better than her, that she has secondhand stuff. She's been like this. This is her Achilles heel. But she never stopped to think, you're being afforded the same privilege. Did you ever stop to think that those girls might think that of you? You know, so this is her path she needs to walk. I did nothing wrong. But my sister, who is in denial, had to go out of her way to say what a wonderful man her father is, what a family that is, and blah, 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 and that, you know, I'm the one with the problem. And I walked right into that crowd. And they played it big time. And my sister saw that wedge, and she went for it. And so now, here I am. They know where I'm at. I don't really care. But they don't interact with me. Just maybe one or two people, and that's it. They don't. I'm not a part. They don't invite me over to family stuff. And I've set the boundary. My mother's 90 years old. She's still alive. Why? I feel sorry for her now. I don't have any feelings one way or the other from her, you know. But I just won't be around her. I will not look at her. I won't be around her. I want nothing to do with her, so I just stay away. But I'm not a part of that family. But my sister, oh, families are everything, blah, blah, blah. Well, not when it goes against what you think it should be. And my sister is a multiple, and I know who's doing it. I know exactly who's doing it. But I just walk away, and I've walked away again. But I know in my heart that the love that I gave my daughter will come back. Because love is far more powerful than what goes on within my family. And that's all I can do.
Thank you for sharing that message of love. Definitely, that's a powerful force. I'm curious, I'm Mormon, I grew up in the Mormon church. My experience has been very different than yours.
Good. Yeah, hopefully better.
Mine is different than yours.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm curious, though, as someone that's sitting, I support survivors and work with survivors, and I'm curious if there's something that you recommend as resources you found in your own healing, as I educate religious leaders, as I talk to people, is there something in particular that you found very helpful just to bring awareness that, so that things like that, because in whether it's the Mormon church or any other religion, it tends to hide, can be hid in type of a religious organization because of various reasons there. But I'm just interested if there's something that you found to be helpful as a way to start educating people to help them be aware of and looking for signs so that abuse can stop and not be perpetrated.
Put lock on the doors in the Sunday school rooms is a good start with the little kids in there. You know, everything's kind of closed door and stuff. I mean, there's little things you can do, you know, but I think that they have national studies for that. But to me, going through this, you know, leaders should help that person get therapy. You know, you and I both know the Mormon Church will feed you if you need food. They'll help you to pay your bills. You know, they'll make sure you have a home. I mean, you know, that's all I ever knew. And so when the stake president said that to me, you know, well, piss off, you know. But to me, it would have been helpful if they said, we want you to go get help. We're going to support you in your recovery work and stuff. No, I had to do it on my own. I had had no money to do it, but I had two victim witness cases through my kids. So, you know, there was no help. But they do need to be supportive. But they also need to know that it's far more infiltrated than they realize. That the person who they look up to and respect and honor and think as a wonderful person is the most deviated person on this earth. I mean, they're really bad people. You know, I mean, again, I'm going to go back to love. You love them and help them. You know, when you treat yourself and others with respect, dignity, and honesty, it clears out all the BS. You know, I even went through time. Mormon Church owes me some damn money. I'm really struggling here, and it's like, whatever. Now I'm like, whatever, I gotta move on. You know, I'm not gonna sit there and stay mad, you know. So, but, you know, for me, overcoming the religious indoctrination, because that's exactly what it is. Just like you said, you're in small rooms, and for even the educational system, you know, this is what it is. And if you're not, you will be ostracized in the Mormon Church. They will all. The group mentality is very, I find very interesting to watch, because you will be ostracized. You're not like one of us. You know, it's like Raiders and 49ers. We don't play well with each other. I find it very interesting. Well, why not? You know, but they're different. Human beings have different behavior patterns and stuff. And again, I'm not educated in this. It's just what I see. I could be wrong, you know. But we all have our own behaviors. We all have, you know, but they all end up being, we all behave the same way, but we don't behave the same way, if that makes any sense. But again, I go back to love. I go back to being a pocket of light in a pocket of love. Empowerment. You know, I am about empowering yourself, because I had no power. I was nothing. I had no self-worth. And it was a very long journey for me to find that self-worth. But I found it through martial arts. I found it through martial arts people who stayed my friend and stayed loyal to me. And I learned life's lessons about there are friends in your lives who are users and will never call you, and you're the only one putting out anything in the relationship. You know, those lessons that you have to learn that I never had an opportunity to learn growing up because I wasn't allowed. Does that make sense? So, how much time? Am I not talking enough? Is that Neil? Go ahead.
I'll give you one quick story, so you might like this. So I have an older daughter, and I split from my family when I was in my 30s. She's 20 right now. And they turned her against me.
Yeah.
And it was terrible. But you know what? I felt sorry for her. It was stuck in the middle. I just kept thinking, this is a child. I felt really bad for her. And they broke the court orders, and they did all kinds of stuff they weren't supposed to do, and I could have thrown them in jail, but I didn't because I knew it would be upsetting for her.
Yeah.
So I lost her for a long time. So now she's getting married. She's 29, but her fiancé is fantastic. And I'm invited to the wedding, and I'm going to be in the wedding, and none of my family members have been invited.
Wow.
And we're back together, and she's wonderful, and she thanked me for letting her have time to be angry and get upset and go through her own healing process. So I have to share that with you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Because I really need that. Because you sit there and you put yourself down, what did I do wrong? Exactly. You know, what I never thought for one moment, not one moment, I did everything right. I healed myself. I stopped the abuse. I went through hell to make sure my kids were safe, you know. And then that happens.
Yeah.
You don't, and it was just unnerving. It's like, wait a minute, I'm sorry. Can I live in La La Land from here? You know, I did all the right things, and I didn't do it for my daughter to say, piss off. You know, and that, it's been 4 or 5 years now. And it's hard.
That happened in our family, too. My son, they try and take you apart. They try and take your kids away and through mind control, whatever. And my son, for years, went to Mother's Day at my mother's house rather than his own mother, which, of course, broke his own mother's heart all the time.
Yeah.
But
he's
now... Well, that was before the time we knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And then we knew what was going on. Ended up coming back to us, and right now he's in the teacher, but he's going to be a therapist. He's right now apprenticing. He has to get in the apprentice hours. So, yeah, love does overtake the other things.
Thank you.
The sort of thing I could say is your family also, you find out it doesn't have to be the ones that you came with.
Yeah.
The ones you end up loving, like you end up with a small group of people who are loving people, and they're your family. You know, just biologically doesn't really matter all the time.
I mean, I have people in martial arts. When it's my birthday, if you go to my webpage, my Facebook, people in the World Cooks One Association wish me happy birthday all over the world. And I'm like, thank you. And I have one guy in England, he can't keep his hands off me. Nancy Bassett, no, but he's a good guy. And, you know, he's married, but we met in when I went to Korea in 2005. We had the world thing in Korea. And in Busan, and they had the world tournament there, and we spent 10 days in yeehaw, you know. And we just became really good friends. And he's always pawning on me and hugging me and stuff. And I'm like, you know, all right. And then last year we had seminar, and he was there, and I'm like, you know. And then that was it. He's all over me again. You're great, Kim. Come on, you got to come to England and all that kind of stuff, you know. But it's so nice to have those kinds of interactions when I never had any of that kind of nurturing ever. And again, even like with my mom, I have memories of my mother's face changing. So that had to tell me that, you know, again, it happened to her and she's really damaged. Now, my dad has no excuse in my book, but he has a Masonic background and he went into the Mormon church. Thank you. But again, the patriarchal environment empowered him and he just lost it. And he knowingly went down a bad path, you know. And so, and it wouldn't surprise me if he was molested somewhere along the line. It's like, well, everybody else is doing it. Why not him too? So, you know, but my mother is a very damaged woman, you know, because I can remember watching her, even how her body moved. I had to watch her face to see if I was going to be okay or not. Was I safe or not? And I had to watch her face. And that's how I survived her. And I remember being at the end of the hallway, and I had a little cardboard or a chalkboard, and I'd have my back up against the wall, and I would have the chalkboard in front of me so I didn't have to look at her, and I would just write on the chalkboard, and that's how I played during the day, is I would be at the end of the hallway where nobody can sneak up on me, or I would hide in closets. So, you know, it's just one of those things. And you know, now I don't, I mean, if she died, it would be like, it's probably a good thing. So, but, you know, I don't know where to go with that. So, I'm sorry, I'm a little bit more rattled than usual. Usually I get a lot more interaction and stuff, but I just, some things have been rattling me lately, so I apologize. I want to talk about my weaknesses and strengths. My strength is, yeah, I can talk, guys. When I was at my yearly instructor training in Houston, this guy, Sabanim is fourth degree, Stevie, he's from Arkansas. Now, he weighs a good 300 pounds. And we were doing techniques. And he wanted me to get this right technique just right. And I had a chance to use my strength because I am a strong person. I have a man's strength. And I could really practice on him. He's a really big guy. Well, I ended up a hip throw. And I actually got him off the ground. And he was balancing on my hips and his feet were off the ground. And Master Alex, the grandmaster's son, comes walking by and went, and I smiled and I said, I got quarter horse legs. What can I say? I'm strong. But I was really proud of that because, like, wow, I picked up a 300-pound guy. Okay, not bad for 54, you know. But I'm naturally loud. I will put a spade on the table even at work. I'm trying so hard to not talk loud. I try so hard to not put a spade on the table, you know, not to be so upfront, you know. Am I on 10 minutes or 2 minutes? Oh, see, I am talking too much. But that, those are the things I have to recognize, is that for most of society, and I to this day, I am still blind to society's protocols. I'm just going to be me, and everybody else needs to go around me because I don't get this. I'm completely blind to it. I try really hard. I'm a little better at it. You know, that's my weaknesses. My strength is that I'm a very caring person, you know. So what, since I only have 2 minutes, what is being healed to? Anybody wants to share what being healed is? Your perspective? What's your end goal?
You talk about previous lives. I think it's like being on a continuum. And one end is the dark. One end is the light. Mm-hmm. You come into life at where we left off the last life to go towards the light. And those of us that have suffered from ritual abuse have a little more work to do than some of the others. But as mm-hmm. you uncover that,
yeah.
you get closer to the light and you have more love. Because it's just underneath there. It's underneath all the darkness that has happened.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Anybody else? I like to think I'm on the fast track to the light, okay? Because that was not necessary what happened. Maybe it was like, oh yeah, take the quick course there. Go through all this hell and you'll get there faster. So anybody else like to share? Yeah, go ahead.
Self-esteem, self-worth, and self-confidence. To me, that's what healing looks like. Because I felt so disempowered for so many years. Like, for example, I was always attracted to artists and people who made art and music, and I'd be the girl in the corner chain smoking and doing
mm-hmm.
drugs and
yeah.
watching everybody, but not doing anything myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
now, the more I heal,
you're not in the corner
this
anymore.
Artist is coming out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the most incredibly, it's so satisfying in school because I realized deep down I had this great love for this
yes.
thing. I just didn't feel the self-worth or the self-love or the power to do anything about it.
Congratulations.
But it's gradual, you know.
It is.
I'm not
thing.
Afraid to show my stuff to anybody. You know,
yeah.
I do it at home alone. And then
yeah, I'm in the closet a lot, I think.
But I'm doing it, you know.
You're
before,
doing it.
Before,
yeah.
I was just doing drugs and smoking. You
yeah.
know, I did,
yeah.
That's all I did. But,
yeah.
But I'd like to have the confidence. And one thing that helps me is I pick people I admire and I
mm-hmm.
study them, like you were saying.
I study different people.
I look up artists that I admire and I like their attitude and their work and the things they're doing. And I really study them and I make them my idol for a
yeah.
while, you know. But I think that helps me when you have a model you can look up to, you know. Aspire to.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
I'm
going to say these four things. This is my first favorite one. Never confuse your knight in shining armor for an idiot in tin foil. I love that. I love that one. When things are falling apart, they may actually be falling into place. Just like that one night I'm driving, I had nothing. I didn't know what the future meant, what was in for me. sometimes people with the worst past can create the best futures. This is my favorite by Tupac. Death is not the greatest loss in life. The greatest loss is what dies inside while we are alive. Never surrender. And I'm all for that. So, thank you.